Bucks fans, we are less than 3 weeks from kickoff. Unbelievable. The Ira Kaufman podcast is always kicked off featuring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the Baron of Big Store Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the King of Newport Richie, and Uncle Ira himself, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. Ira, how are you?
I'm feeling very relieved, gentlemen, because I just got off the phone with my good cousin Rick, who lives in Galveston, Texas, and has obviously been watching this Laura intensify incredibly fast. Right now it's, I think, up to a Category 3. It might be a 4 when it makes landfall a little after midnight tonight. And Galveston's under a mandatory evacuation, but, you know, members of the Kaufman family, we don't listen. We're tough people. So he's still in his place, and I think it's wobbling a little bit to the east, and that's terrible news for people in Lake Charles and that area. But, Lee, you know hurricanes. If you're on the west side, it's not nearly as bad as if you're on the east side. So he's thinking about 35-mile-an-hour winds, which, you know, is basically the same velocity as when Isbitz makes some proclamations, and so he thinks he can handle it. You're famous for a stiff wind over there, Stephen.
Ira, you know who famously lives in Galveston?
No.
Mike Evans.
Oh, yeah, you're right, Lee. You're absolutely right. Mike Evans from Galveston, Texas. I've been down there, and I got to tell you guys, and I don't want to be cruel to Texans, but Galveston Beach, so to speak, is nowhere near comparable to the beaches on the Florida Gulf Coast. Not even close. The sand is coarse. It's a very small beach in terms of length and width. We got it all over Galveston, gentlemen, but I'm very happy that Laura's turning a little bit east of Galveston.
Ira, you're cracking me up. What are you doing on the beach in Texas? I don't even want to know. I don't even want to know these things. Ira, your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford. If you need cash fast, you could sell your car today at Bill Curry Ford. They are buying. They are paying top dollar for cars, trucks, vans, you name it. Get an instant quote right at JoeBucksFan.com or go to BillCurryFord.com. But more important, Ira, we're all Bill Curry Ford customers, and General Manager Sean Solomon is personally, he is ready to assist any Bucks fan with anything they might need at the car dealership, a truck, financing, insurance, auto body service. He is just there to help you personally, which is very rare, and that's the family service you can expect from Tampa's first family of Ford, Sean Sullivan. He'll help you out, email, phone, in person, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. So pleased to put that out there because it's true. And you can't get answers like that from every dealership out there.
Steve, I want to add one thing. And, of course, I've got the Ford Escape, very happy with it. Great ride, very comfortable. In terms of 2019, Steve, you know, like NFL teams, you always churn the roster in the offseason. You know, those bottom 10 guys, you look at them and you probably got to replace most of them. And that's just the way of the world in the NFL. Well, the car business is similar in that respect because Sean Sullivan, like most Ford dealers, still has 2019s on the lot. Lee, there's great deals to be had on 2019s. They'll work with you. Don't be scared that it's not a 2020 because it's all about value, Lee, and you can get tremendous value on 2019s.
So that means you can sort of buy the Peyton Barber of 2019 trucks right now at Bill Curry Ford. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think it's more like Ezekiel Elliott. Forget about Peyton Barber.
All right, listen, Ira, the Buccaneers have made a very interesting signing. It's not official yet, but Adam Schefter broke it a couple of days ago, and I asked Bruce Arians today about A.Q. Shipley, who is a center. He played for Arians in Pittsburgh, in Indianapolis, and in Arizona. He started 16 games for them last year. They ran the ball pretty well, and their offense came around. He's not dead weight by any stretch, but he's 34 years old, and he's got a big personality. This guy's an interesting character, but in he comes. It's not official yet, but Arians said today, hell of a player, hell of a leader, great depth. You know, we're covered in case of COVID-19. I trust him. I want to know what you guys think of this signing.
I'm absolutely shocked, and Buck fans have to be absolutely pleased because, Lee, they haven't been awash in veteran depth around here. And I think he's going to take the role of Evan Smith, sort of a center slash guard, Lee. And I think he's better than Evan Smith. So you've added Joe Haig, who's very versatile. And this guy can play anywhere in the interior, I believe. And all of a sudden, Haig and this guy's, they got experience, Lee. Got a lot of starts between them. And you hate the word potential. So all of a sudden, when we're dealing with the veteran backups in terms of depth, and you know how I've been consistent about how lucky they've been up front in terms of injuries, well, you can't count on that, Lee. You can't count on that in this league. Never mind COVID. I'm talking about a bum shoulder or, you know, a bad knee that knocks you out for 6 weeks. And all of a sudden, I think they're making some very savvy moves here.
Let's calm down. Let's analyze things analytically here. Ira, you're actually ready to run to a bar and start doing shots because the Bucks signed some guy who, in theory, is replacing Evan Smith. That would be like me going to start chugging beers at Hooters because the Bucks signed someone to replace Mike Jenkins.
Well,
please.
You're leaving out the part where I said the guy's better than Evan Smith, so it is an upgrade.
You can't
sneeze at upgrades. You can't.
Did Evan Smith ever get a job after he was let go by the Bucks?
It's an upgrade, my friend. It's an upgrade.
I would hope so. I mean, anybody with a pulse is an upgrade over there. I mean, come on. My first reaction was, and I like Shipley. I remember when he played at Penn State, he was good. He wasn't bad when he played with Arizona. Usually when a signing like this happens in August, what's coming next? Usually a signing at this time of the year means something else is coming. And that something else generally is not good. And that segues into the red flag that Arians hoisted up today in his Zoom press conference. When he was asked why Chris Godwin's getting all these days off, which are generally given when, you know, there's enough snaps going on because of the sports science, they're giving guys a break so they could play adequately in December. He was asked about Chris Godwin. Arians said, essentially, that's for me to know and you guys not to find out. Nobody to find out. So,
Now, Steve, leave it to DeKemper, our beloved co-host, to jump from a backup center to Chris Godwin, Steve. Now, let's stick with the center for a minute. He's an upgrade. We can't piss on the Bucks year after year for a lack of depth, and all of a sudden they make a decent signing as a reserve and smack them around.
I'm not pissing on the Bucks. I'm wondering what's coming next.
All right.
Again, a signing this time of year tells me something's up with a guy higher up the food chain on the depth chart.
But I don't see the connection with the center and Chris Godwin, Lee. I don't see it.
Well, we're talking about what's being hidden. Like, once again, A.Q. Shipley, I don't think was signed because he's this great piece of depth and he's the last chess piece to make a run to play for the Super Bowl in Tampa in February. I'm thinking someone higher up the food chain on the roster, on the depth chart, is dinged or nicked up or something else is going on. Now, I'll give Arians credit. He said, essentially, this is for a COVID, in case he didn't say names, but in case Jensen comes down with the virus. Okay, I'll buy that. But again, to me, a signing of this nature at this time suggests someone higher up the food chain. Hint, hint, starter, hint, hint, there's something wrong with him. And hint, hint, there's something wrong with Chris Godwin that hint, hint, Bruce Arians won't talk about. Because hint, hint, he's hiding something. Otherwise, he would say what's wrong with him.
I understand, Lee. You know, and until we get further notice, there's a slight bit of concern. Steve, one other thing this signing tells us and reinforces. Arians wants guys that he's comfortable with. I've lost count of how many former Cardinals have been on this roster between last year and this year, and people that Arians has worked with, and he wants reliability in terms of character and performance, and Steve, this is another indication.
Yeah, it really is. Okay.
Steve, what is your level of concern about Chris Godwin at the moment?
Total unknown, Ira. There's no way to even predict. The guy's missed more practices than you would think he should at this time. Lee noted a couple of years ago, Godwin had allergy issues. Maybe that's bothering him. Could be something small. He is a guy who has played through everything, but every year, if you talk to Chris Godwin, he'll tell you he's just, you know, battled injuries all year long. He's just one of these guys who gets banged up. He plays very well. And I'm starting to think maybe Chris Godwin has the body of somebody who's, you know, maybe a 6-year veteran instead of a 4th-year veteran, just because he is somebody who plays banged up a lot. But I'm not really concerned unless I really hear that he's not playing on opening day, which seems very unlikely.
You know, Lee, if he is nicked up, I think it's probably another indication of the physical nature of the way Godwin plays the position. I think he's one of the more physical receivers in the league.
Oh, yeah, he is. It's hard for me to fathom that he's beat up already. And, you know, we're grasping at straws here, of course. But it's sort of uncomfortable if he has a physical issue. And like Steve said, he's beat up a lot. You know, generally the Bucs don't hide anything, or teams in general, not just the Bucs. Teams don't hide things that are benign, or, you know, like the Bucs had a guy today that apparently sprained his ankle, although they weren't bashful about hiding how the guy had a sprained ankle. Of course, you can't hide a guy getting carted off the field. But, you know, they didn't have any issue talking about that. Or some guys got nicked up. They don't have really an issue about that. That's why I'm, you know, to me, it's a red flag when Godwin has some kind of issue and Aaron just flat out says, that's for me to know and no one else to find out.
Whoa. You know, yeah, Steve, one of the reasons I think Godwin's issue is so much on our antenna, the three of us, in a way, I think you also have to go to how safe this camp has been, generally speaking. I mean, any serious problems have usually dealt with backup players. There has been no significant injuries in training camp. And guys, you monitor 31 other teams and you know, starters go down all the time, sometimes with a serious injury. And the Bucs have not experienced that. And let's hope Godwin's not in that category.
All right, Ira, the Buccaneers, AQ Shipley, the guy could potentially be a replacement for Ryan Jensen. Wouldn't that be the case, Ira? Because next year, if they want to re-sign all these guys that we like so much, somebody's going to have to get cut. So if you got a guy in-house that might be able to pull off 1 year on the cheap versus $10 million Jensen, what do you think?
I wouldn't be in a hurry to cut Jensen. I think he had the best year of any O-lineman on the Bucs last year. I think he's the acknowledged leader of the line. I'm not saying Shipley's a bad player, but the fact remains that until August 26th, he was on the market, and nobody signed him. So let's not go crazy. I got no problem with the way Jensen played last year.
I think Steve is onto something, but I also agree with you, Ivan. I think Shipley is a signing, if they can afford him. And, you know, I don't know what kind of hocus-pocus they could do with the numbers. The Seahawks always seem to find a way. The Ravens always seem to find a way, because there's no doubt there are going to be Bucs players, starters, that they're banking on this year that won't be on the roster next year. And that's not by preference. That's by unfortunate choice, because the salary cap is going to be so much lower. This might be a sign of the future with Shipley coming on board, that he might be your starting center in 2021. And the Bucs and Arians figured that, you know, if he goes somewhere else, he won't be available next year. But I agree with you, Ira. I'm not going to be in a hurry to get rid of Jensen, and he will be starting this year, and he should be starting this year. But next year is a whole different animal.
All right, Sage. Now, listen, Bruce Arians said today, interesting comment. We don't hear him talk a lot of special teams, but he said two things about special teams. One, the kicking competition still appears wide open. He said the most consistent guy will make it, and if it's really tied, it'll be the most consistent guy within 35 yards. And he also said there aren't any young players that are really standing out as special teams types. What do you make of that?
From what I've heard from Arians over the last couple of weeks, and maybe the entire offseason, guys, and I don't think I'm off base here, when it comes to the three phases of play, offense, defense, special teams, he's the most concerned about special teams, Lee. That's his biggest issue. And I'm not sure he's wrong. The kicker is better from 52 than 37. That's a problem.
That is a big problem.
The special teams guy says it's wide open. He says Gay's getting pushed. Well, you can look at it two ways. That's good, because the Bucks are having an open competition. And B, why should a drafted kicker be in danger of losing his job in year two? That could be a problem. Their return game's in shambles, Lee. They got nobody.
What return game?
They're trying, you know, and Antoine Winfield's name's now in the mix, and they're desperate. They're desperate. And as Steve pointed out, Lee, Arians doesn't feel he's got enough cover people. This is a problem. And you've heard me say it before, Lee. It's worth saying it again. The team you're chasing, the team the whole division's chasing, is outstanding on special teams. They're exemplary. Mm-hmm. They got a punter. They got a kicker. They got Taysom Hill. And it's a huge advantage. And unless the Bucks close that gap, that's going to be a major issue going forward. I don't think Arians is happy one bit, Lee, with Bucks special teams.
Isn't it an annual gripe? It's almost like people complain about the hot weather in the summer. Does the Bucks need a kicker? So isn't it time to resolve this? How many years in a row, every year, they don't have a kicker, they don't have a kicker, they don't have a... Now, last year, when they brought in Gay, and this is where Arians comes into play, Arians said something I thought was very telling. And it was almost, if you want to stretch it out, it was almost an admission that everyone, including the Bucks, were seduced by the siren of the big leg. And when someone said today to Arians that the AAF legend, Elliot Fry, kicked a 56-yard field goal, and Arians said, "We're unlikely to try a 56-yard field goal unless it's the end of a half." Well, that's pretty much why Gay was signed last year, wasn't it? Or not signed, but kept. Was like, man, he's got a leg. He's got a booming leg. That's all you ever heard about. And it was true. He had a booming leg. But, oh, by the way, all those short kicks that he missed might have cost the playoffs. Now it's almost like an admission of guilt that, yeah, we got sucked in by Gay's leg last year and it cost us.
You were on the Armstrong call. Coach Armstrong, he mentioned big leg only because somebody else asked a question about it, but he mentioned the word consistency 11 times, Steve, and that's what the Bucks have been looking for since little old Matt Bryant was dispatched and kicked up a storm for the Falcons for a freaking decade, you know, before finally calling it a day, and that only made it even worse for Buck fans to see all the problems, and there's Matt Bryant still going strong 10 years later. I mean, that's a disaster.
You know, moral of the story is, don't get rid of decent players, which, by the way, this franchise just had an epiphany a year ago that, you know, maybe that's a good thing. Don't get rid of good players. Connor Barth, he actually had a good year or two where he looked like he was going to be the long-term answer, and then he goes out and blows his Achilles in the in a charity game. And the Bucks, by the way, later were so desperate for a kicker, they actually brought him back.
We gotta call the way we see it, Steve. The punter is outstanding on kickoffs, but he's only ordinary when he's punting. And that's got to improve, too. So, Steve, tell me where I'm off base. I just don't think Arians has a lot of positive things to say about special teams.
Certainly not yet. So it's something to monitor. And that was Elliot Fry who he said kicked the 56-yarder. But like he said, you know, we don't need any more range than that. We're just not going to be kicking field goals like that. And he pretty much said range, leg power won't be an issue. And the way he said it, I would agree with Lee, that it sort of felt like, hey, we're not going to be seduced by leg power this year. So hopefully they'll all get consistent. And the X factor is we'll never know what those kicks look like when they go to practice in the stadium. We don't get to see that 90% of the time. Plus, ironically, of course, Armstrong with the Falcons was Matt Bryant's coach for 10 years or so. So he knows what consistency looks like. Ira, on a positive note, Mike Evans, I asked Arians about what kind of camp Mike Evans is having. And Arians really, you know, he really kind of gushed, you know, considering he was throwing some bombs at some other guys. He really kind of gushed and said that Evans just is really connecting with Brady and it's such a thing and he's having a great camp. And you know, I really think Mike Evans is sort of lost in all this, how much better he might be able to get because he's still young and because he's got all that experience as well. And, you know, there's just that many more weapons to take pressure off him.
You know, Lee, I think Steve makes an excellent point about Evans. He does kind of get lost in the shuffle a little bit. We've talked about Godwin a lot here. But all Evans does, Lee, is go out and, you know, get 1,100 yards. And he is the number one receiver. And I got to be honest, as much as I like Godwin, if Evans wasn't on his team and all of a sudden Godwin's the man, you don't know how that would affect him. So Evans is the man here, and everybody knows it. Should he come up, Lee, with a seventh straight 1,000-yard season? I mean, the guy would be two-thirds on the way to Canton. I mean, we got to be honest here. And we remember coming out of college, Lee, some people thought that Manziel made Evans, and now, you know, we kind of acknowledge it might have been the other way around. So you got, you know, and I just wrote a column about Godwin's attitude and demeanor, and calling him, you know, implying he's the anti-diva, which I do believe, but Evans is right there with him, Lee.
Oh, yeah.
He's right there with him. Evans never complains about having more balls thrown his way. You know, the certain things he needs to improve on. He's never going to be a great yak guy, Lee. But he does so many things so well. He's absolutely elite, and he's in the top five, and he belongs there. He's a top 40 player, according to his peers. And Steve's point's right, Lee. We kind of take him for granted a little bit.
I think you're right, Ira. I agree. We may take him for granted a little bit. Your column, I thought you made a hell of an analogy when you know, referred to Antonio Brown, just the fact that Juju Smith-Schuster was getting a few more targets, that Brown just went bananas. I mean, he lost it mentally. He literally lost it mentally. And how that's just the contrast as with Evans. With Godwin, when Godwin was a rookie, I'll never forget this, when Godwin was a rookie, and specifically when he caught that touchdown pass to beat the Saints, and the Bucks lost the opportunity to draft Quentin Nelson, in the locker room, Evans was talking up Godwin. It was just Evans and myself just talking. And he was talking up Godwin, and he said, he's a number one receiver. I'm like, oh, Mike, I thought you were. He goes, I am. But just the opposite of Antonio Brown, Evans was Godwin's biggest booster. Now, most other receivers, you draft a guy like Godwin, even though it's third round, and he's succeeding, this guy would get all bent out of shape, most guys. Divish and you know, they get all selfish. Evans, completely opposite. Evans was talking Godwin up. The contrast that you used between Evans and that nutcase Brown was stark. Great analogy you used, Ira.
Thanks, Lee. And Steve, you know, the Bucks are blessed to have these two guys with their attitudes, because that's, you know, it's a chronic problem with elite wide receivers. Attitude can be a problem, and the Bucks don't have it. And that's a big plus for this organization. I don't think Godwin's going anywhere. I think he's the offseason priority. And Evans isn't going anywhere either, Steve.
Could Evans in part have been, and still is, Godwin's biggest booster? Because he knows with Godwin on the other side of the field, it's going to draw some coverage away from him.
I think so. And I think one other part, Lee, of Evans talking up Godwin when Godwin was a rookie is, and we can see it in the locker room over the years, man, Evans wants to win.
Yeah.
He wants to play in big games, and I love that about him.
Sure does.
Ira, speaking of big games, opening day, Sunday, September 13th, 2.5 weeks away. That's when Bucks fans can get together and watch the game in a seat, no standing room only, seated at the beautiful Big Storm Brewing Company Tap Room, 49th Street in Clearwater, just south of Ulmerton Road. Modern, Florida's best craft beer, great sound, great Wi-Fi, A-plus food with the new menu and the new kitchen, and best of all, Ira, the sage of Tampa Bay sports yourself, will be there with a nice corner table, enjoying the time, and you'll have your own personal bodyguard there. It's going to be a great time all season long. Road games at Big Storm Brewing Company. Bromosa will be flowing. It's going to be a great time, Ira.
You know, Steve, I guarantee, and that's a strong word, but Lee will back me up on this because He's a frequent visitor to Big Storm. I guarantee that Buck fans that show up for the opener in New Orleans and watching it with the Sage at Big Storm in Clearwater, I guarantee, Lee, those Buck fans that have never been to Big Storm Brewery, and there'll be some that are making their Big Storm debut that day, they're in for a revelation. And that's a strong word, too, Lee. The drink, the food, the ambiance, I think that'll be the start of being a habitual customer of Big Storm. Once you're there once, Lee, you can't help but loving the place.
And the other day I went there and I tried something different. Their Bavarian pretzel, that honking thing, that's a meal in itself. It's so big. And it's good.
Hey, Steve, Bavarian pretzel, isn't that another word for the Buck defensive scheme the last few years?
I thought you were going to talk about your fondness of Bavarian women, Ira, but we'll skip that. Listen, Ira, Bruce Arians, he had some more things to say, and we're at that time, Ira. I'm getting that vibe. I want to see if your sageness has this vibe. But we're really at that time now where, you know what? We're 10 days really from game week. There's probably 3 or 4 more hard practices left. So I want to ask you now, Ira, do you expect any big changes with this lineup? Anything that you think might trend in a way that we're not expecting and what we see from the lineup, from the expectations when it comes to what we might see in New Orleans?
Well, the one area that I've been looking at all training camp is right tackle and whether Wirfs is going to be man enough for the job week one. You know, eventually the guy's going to be a starter. You don't draft a guy that high and he's not going to be a starter. But is he going to be a starter right from the bat, off the bat, with no preseason, no OTAs? Challenging, not just for Wirfs, but for every rookie and undrafted free agent just trying to make the team. Right now, Lee, unless I'm reading things wrong, Wirfs will line up next to Kappa and perhaps next to Gronkowski in the Superdome, which will not have fans, and have a balanced attack that we haven't seen around these parts for so long. But they got to be in the game to do it, Lee. They can't be down, 17-3 at the half, and, everything's out the window.
Well, I'm not a balanced attack kind of guy because I think you should do what's working and be balanced. Just you can beat your chest and say, hey, we were balanced. Did you win or lose? And we lost. Why was that? Oh, the running game wasn't doing anything. Let's keep going to it. We want to be balanced. You know, I'm a firm believer in sticking with what works. If that means you're passing, then keep it up. Perfect example, last year against the Giants. They were shredding the Giants with the pass. And Arians took the ball out of Jameis' hands. What happens? They lost. So there goes your balanced attack. That's just me. If the Bucs are running the ball down the Saints' throat, I will dare say the Bucs are winning. Because I'm not sold on this Bucs are running game. And I thought it was very interesting. And I may get in trouble for this. Oh, well. I'm tired of the pestering. Got a text last night from someone like, hey, I read your Buck story on Ronald Jones, and yeah, it was neat that you wrote about his big run yesterday. And I thought he had a better game than what you're writing about in a run game. And you know what? I can only write about what I see. I can't invent things. I can't make things up. I can't have a genie bottle where I rub it and poof, Ronald Jones looks like Eric Dickerson. I can't do it unless I see it. You know, I'm always appreciative of the open line of communication between various people at one buck. This guy texted me out of the blue, didn't like what I wrote about Ronald Jones. Okay, fine. You know, win games. How about winning games? Maybe I might like that better than my story. At any rate, Arian said today, he asked about the goal line run situation. Wasn't happy with it. I can't win for losing.
I hear you, Lee. Now, Steve, one more thing about the roster and any surprises. Steve, I got my eye on this kicker thing for this reason. Under normal circumstances, if things are fairly close, you go with the 5th-round pick against the guy that's just showing up. Everybody understands that. Guess what, gentlemen? This is not normal. All chips are in. And I think at the end of the day, if they think that this kid is more reliable, that's the key word, is more reliable, can Arians trust them to make a 40-yarder? That's important with 3 minutes left that puts the game away or puts the Bucks ahead, I think they're going to go with him. And I don't think, Steve, in these circumstances, that the fifth round status, I don't think that's going to protect Kay one iota if they feel the other guy's more reliable.
I agree with you, Ira, but the wrinkle here is, and it could be very interesting, maybe one of the first times we've ever seen it, there's a 16-man practice squad this year. Most teams are going to keep two kickers in case one gets sick. And you're allowed to protect guys on practice squad. There's a protect element this year, too, as well. And I think I wouldn't be shocked if they go with Gay. All right, they slap Fry on the practice squad. Up he comes and on 1 week, and they've got two kickers and without having to make an actual decision. It wouldn't shock me whatsoever if the Bucks play a two-kicker game a little bit if they're not happy with whatever happens week one, which would be unprecedented and would be classic Buccaneers.
I guess, Lee, what I'm saying is if Gay wins the job, he's going to be on a short leash.
Here's one thing I was going to say about Tristan Wirfs. Now, I'm not going to profess I'm you know, some offensive line guru, so I'm not Bill Muir. But from what I've seen of Wirfs, looks like he can handle himself. You know, I don't see anything glaring from him. I don't see a big jailbreak at all when Brady goes back to pass. I don't see a jailbreak from the right-hand side. What I can say, again, this is just one play. I don't know if this was Alex Kappa or if this was intended or what. I just, you know, unfortunately, I don't have a TV set at practice when I watch practice. Things move so quick, and unfortunately, I don't have a DVR where I could rewind the play and see what happened, what transpired more intently. But there was a pass play. I couldn't tell if Alex Kappa shoved his defender into Tristan Wirfs or not, but two guys run Wirfs. Let's just say those guys didn't get the Brady. I'm not saying he dominated them, but he kept them off Brady. So if that to me is a good sign that he wasn't overwhelmed at the moment.
I agree. And Steve, if Gronkowski lines up next to Wirfs on the right side, that Lee, I know you hate the word, but potentially that's a lot of physicality in run blocking. Gronkowski is noted for it. A lot of tight ends don't want to block. Kittle is an exception, but a lot of great, you know, the Antonio Gates and Jason Witten. I mean, these guys were never known for their blocking. And neither is O.J. Howard, by the way, until I see it. And
he's not a powerful blocker, as Arians called him?
Yeah, you know, Steve, that bread-and-butter run play that you need on third and two, it could be off right tackle with Gronkowski and Wirfs. There's a chance there.
Sure, Ira, I know you're obsessed with the bread-and-butter run. A guy who's sort of hidden gold out there in media as it relates to the Bucks. He's not on too much. His name is Max Starks. He was a lineman, played for Arians for many years in Pittsburgh, Arizona as well. And he's on SiriusXM NFL Radio now. He also does his share of interviews out in Arizona. And he is super tight, like good, good buddies with Byron Leftwich. So he sprinkles out these Leftwich nuggets and in various ways, and he clearly is in regular conversation with Leftwich. And one thing that didn't really come up way back when Tom Brady was home invading into Leftwich's house back in March, April, Stark said, look, he was on the air. I said, look, Tom Brady going over to Leftwich's house right after he signs like that and to hang out and get together in a pandemic, he said, that's not normal. He said, you know, pick an offensive quarterback and think about his new offensive coordinator. He's not running over to the guy's house when he's really almost not supposed to. He said it speaks to the relationship that they built right out of the gate on the phone, same age guys, respect for each other, played at the same time. And that right there should have been an indication to everybody that this is going to be a little bit more special than you might have thought. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it was a sign of respect from Brady towards his rather young offensive coordinator. Of course, Arians was at his lake house, so he's not busting in on Arians. But at the same time, let's not be naive, Lee. The stakes are too high that this is going to be Byron Leftwich's offense, pure and simple. I can't say that, Lee. I don't think you can either.
No.
You know, Arians is the orchestra leader. You know, Christensen and Leftwich are the guys that deal with Brady on a daily basis. But Arians is the architect, Lee, and he's not about to give that up in a season with so much promise. Yeah, Leftwich is going to have input. Of course he is. But between Brady and Arians, Lee, they're going to shape much of this offense.
I always like what Michael Lombardi said when the Bucs signed Brady. Michael Lombardi, the former NFL executive, and he's got a very popular podcast. And he said when Brady decided to come to the Bucs, it was obviously because of Arians and the receivers. And he says, there's no chance Byron Leftwich will have anything to do with this. No chance.
Well, you know, Leftwich, say what you will, but he had the title of offensive coordinator, and this offense ran up and down the field last year and scored a lot of points. So you can't take that away from Leftwich. Again, I don't think he's the orchestra leader, but he plays a part.
Ira, you see water in your house, the first thing you do is go to floridaselite restoration.com and get in touch with Florida's Elite Restoration. So they'll come out to your home and give you a free assessment of whatever's going on with the leak or the mold that you found. You want to call them before you call your insurance company, and they're not going to take your credit card on the phone. They're going to come out and give you a free estimate, get their thermal imaging cameras out, figure out what's going on, and help you figure out what you need to do to tell the insurance company and all that stuff. And of course, they're mold remediation specialists. It's just critical to make them your first call 24/7. They're going to respond. You can get a lot of information right now at floridaselite restoration.com. All right, Ira. So I've got a question for you. Are you ready to handle this? A direct question?
I'm hoping for the best, baby.
All right. Now remember, a direct question for a change here, Ira. So Packers, Vikings, Rams, Seahawks, 49ers, who's not making the playoffs?
Give me that list again, Steven.
Packers, Vikings, Rams, Seahawks, 49ers, who is not making the playoffs? Or perhaps you think they are all playoff teams.
Rams.
Tough
division. San Francisco, Seattle, both better than the Rams. And the Bucks beat out the Rams in the wild card chase.
So that's your final tally right there. Bucks beat the Rams.
Yes.
For the wild card. All right, Sage, I bring that up. It's interesting because your good friend, your close confidant, Mark Dominic, who doesn't like you very much anymore, I think, after you called him, 24-52 Dominic for a few years?
28-52.
Yeah. There you go. He was on the Sirius, Ira, and he was very adamant the Buccaneers are a 10-win team. He thinks they're going to win 10 games. But then Dominic pulled the rug out and said, I don't think that's enough. I don't think it's going to be enough. Now, we understand he's scarred from 2010 when he won 10 games and didn't make the playoffs. But this year, they're adding a wild card team. His math doesn't add up. But, you know, when you dive into it like he did, he thinks they're going to be neck and neck with the Falcons. And he really likes the Packers, Vikings, Rams, and Seahawks and Niners. And we don't even know what's going to come out of the NFC East as far as a number two team there, whatever that might be. And, of course, Bears fans can't believe they finished 8-8 last year, which is actually a better record than the Bucs. Who knows what they might be able to pull off. And, of course, they face the Bucs in Week 5, which could be a critical game. I don't know, Ira. Do you think there's any chance that 10-6 is not good enough?
I think there's very little chance that 10-6 won't be good enough. I think it's pretty rare when you only had six playoff teams per conference that it wasn't good enough. Now, it bit the Bucs in 2010, but I think that was an outlier year. I don't think it happens very often. And, Lee, when you add that seventh team, which is making almost half the teams in the NFL, 14 out of 32 will go to the postseason, it's hard for me to believe that 10-6 isn't going to be good. It's possible, mathematically, that it'll happen. And, by the way, we're assuming the Bucs don't win the division. I think right now the Saints are a better team, but I don't think it's beyond the pale that the Bucs can win the NFC South. If Brady stays upright, this is a talented football team, Lee.
I'm scarred like Mark Dominic. I've heard year after year how this team is loaded with talent, and they go out there and they drop a number two called 5-11. Enough. I don't want to hear about talent. I don't want to hear about all the Pro Bowlers. But I want to hear about guys who are underrated or never getting their props or just freaking win games. That's all I care about right now. I'm tired of all the talk. I lean towards Steve, although I fully agree with Steve. But I lean towards Steve. If they can't make the playoffs now, they may want to think seriously about blowing it up.
It would be a colossal failure, Steve. Colossal failure if this team is not one of the seven NFC teams in the postseason. Colossal.
Well, Sage, I can't go there. I can't. I mean, we're all talking nuances, but I can't go there. If they finish 10-6 and it was some freakish year and that actually wasn't good enough for the playoffs on a tiebreaker, I can't call that a colossal failure. I just can't do it, Ira. But, like, you know, and that's what happened to the Bucs in 2010. But I do disagree with Mark Dominic's math. Like you said, Ira, we know how much you laud your Regents exam back in 1947 in New York, your math grade. Logically, 10-6 is typically good enough to get in most years. Now they've added a team. The math doesn't add up. But I could make the case that, you know what, in this wacky year of the virus, we might have teams that sort of throw in the towel earlier than they usually do if they get off to a bad start, and more teams that would accept a rebuilding situation in such a wacky year like this. You know, like take the Panthers. You know, I don't know. I think we're going to have some more bad teams this year, more haves and have-nots, but they got to win. And the point I was making here with naming those teams right out of the gate is there is a lot of competition.
And here's another possibility, Lee. Let's hope this doesn't happen. The odds are it won't happen, Lee, but it's out there. There is no firm guarantee that there will be a 16-game season. You never know.
True.
Things could happen, and they might have to scrub a couple of weeks, and that would change all the math. I don't see that happening, but you just never know, Lee.
No, who saw any of this happening in February? Yeah, it's just on face value. I'm trying to figure out how you can have 10 wins and not be one of the seven teams that make the playoffs. The odds of that happening would be, let's put it this way. I'd be willing to put $5 down in the Vegas sportsbook if there was such a
problem. I would think that could happen once every 10 or 20 years.
Well, the way it happens is two ways. One, the NFC is way better than the AFC. And so they completely beat up on the AFC teams, have a tremendous record.
And they fatten up.
And fatten up. And then, of course, you have just a big disparity between the teams. Like you got a handful of teams going 3-13 in the NFC. Then, you know, it changes the balance of the numbers. But it's a long shot, and we hope it doesn't happen. But it just illustrates that they've got to win. There is no way that they can't do this. But then you got to play the games, which is what makes it all fun, which is why we're here.
Steve, one of the differences, and it's a big one, is after a season like last year, you heard the mantra, we beat ourselves. We never gave ourselves a chance. There's a little truth to that. A little truth to that with the 41 giveaways, and I'm not putting that all on Jameis Winston. A lot, and the field goal kicking fell apart down the stretch. There were factors. But I don't think you're going to be able to say that with Brady at the helm. We beat ourselves. We were too generous, Southern hospitality. Lee, I think the dynamic changes a little bit in that regard with Brady calling the signals.
Now, there was some chatter, Diana Russini at ESPN, Kay Adams said this too in the past, that they can't fully buy into a 43-year-old quarterback leading a team to the playoffs in Bruce Arians' offense because the guy's going to take hits. And historically, there's a lot of meat to that bone. I do think Brady elevates other players. I'm seeing it with my own eyes, enthusiasm I haven't seen in the players in a long while. And there's a couple of links on JoeBucksFan.com I have to the Buccaneers Instagram stories that back that up. Of course, Instagram stories only last for 24 hours, so if someone's listening to this, it's unlikely that it's still up there. But a secondary effect that Brady's having, sure. But Brady himself, you know, and I've been harping on this for months. He's 43. The history of 43-year-old starting quarterbacks in the NFL is not good. I know we're talking about Brady here, and there's no one ever been like him, but he's still 43. So there's a part of me that says tap the brakes. He's 43, and I've been writing about that for months. But is he making other players better because of his attention to detail and his drive? Sure.
Steve, there's a big disparity, and I think you guys are privy to this, of guys that we talk to. A wide disparity of how much physical deterioration has occurred with Brady at this advanced age. Some people detect a markedly inferior throwing arm. He can't make certain passes. Then I got Ron Jaworski telling me he ain't missed a thing. And some other guys. Steve, it's kind of interesting the way people are looking at Brady in terms of his physical limitations.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that in the practices I've seen. I've seen a damn impressive guy.
Yeah.
I'm sure Brady is 100% right now. I'm sure he looks phenomenal. I'm sure he is phenomenal. But that doesn't mean anything when you get to week 13 of the season. And that's when the 43-year-old stuff kicks in. And the Bucs plan to play till February. It's August. And, you know, that's where the age really comes in for me. And, you know, we don't know that yet, and that's why we're going to see it play out. Take Rob Gronkowski, Ira. In his 9 years, when he first year he didn't start all the time, but in his 8 seasons as a full-time starter, he averaged 12 games a year. And he didn't miss any whole season. He's just a guy who's missed a lot of time over the years, relatively speaking. So they talk about managing him. Where is he going to fit in? How does that look in December, in January, the grind? And, you know, that's what you're looking at with all these old players. Sue has a lot left, I'm sure. But what is his December going to look like? You know, so they got a lot to figure out.
For any of our listeners, guys, that think that Gronkowski is going to change his style because of his age and how many years he's put in the league and he's been out a year. That's not what the Bucs want. Bucs want the old Gronkowski. They don't want him to soften up and curl into a fetal position after catching a 12-yard ball. They want Gronk, and I don't blame them.
I would hope that the powers that be at One Buck Palace are aware of Gronk's history, like Steve just recited, in addition to the fact that he's been out a year, in addition to the fact that he's, what, 31? So, I mean, you know, let's not play Saturday morning cartoons here. You know, we all want certain things, but there's reality, and then there's want. Despite what Arians has said, I would hope they have him on something of a pitch count. But Steve makes a great point about December. It's not so much about August, it's about December. Albert Breer made this point, and you kind of talked about this before, Ira.
Can I say Lee, can I say something about cartoons before you get to Albert Breer?
Uh-oh.
Ira, I want cartoons. That's what I want. I want cartoons because they don't need anyone to catch the ball. They didn't need to sign anybody this year to catch the ball. They got plenty of weapons. I want Gronkowski in there burning out, blocking, and I wanted him to just play a punishing game to get this team to 4-1 and change the culture, and then he can take a month off. So I don't need him to catch balls, in my opinion.
Well, I want him playing like the old Gronkowski and let the chips fall where they may. And if he's out 4 weeks, it's not going to cripple this team. I got an O.J. Howard and a break behind him. I'm not overly concerned.
All right, Lee, I needed my cartoon fix. What's Albert Breer saying?
Well, Ira's always been conscious of, you know, the humidity factor of Florida, that it takes a toll on you. Now, no one whines about humidity more than people from the Northeast. I mean, they come down here, oh my God, it's humid. They wail like you can't believe. But I thought Breer made a good point in his visit down here. He said, look, Brady's 43. We're in uncharted territory with a 43-year-old quarterback. He said, Tampa is not an easy place to practice in August. Is this heat and humidity going to take its physical toll on Brady down the road? Thought that was a fair point. I never thought of that before. Thought that was and leave it to a guy from the Northeast to factor in humidity. Oh, my God, it's humid. I'm going to death.
And Lee, he typed that from his air-conditioned Marriott suite. Don't forget that.
Actually, he said that on a video from his air-conditioned Marriott suite.
Well, I'm glad Lee brought that up, Ira, because today, Wednesday, is the second day off for Tom Brady. He's got a day off today in the Buccaneers bubble, also known as the Glazer Shed. And, you know, it's kind of a different look for Brady, even though he's taken time off in New England. but I don't remember him taking multiple days off in a training camp from the stuff I've looked into. You know, they're managing him too.
That's called being smart, Steve. Now, Steve, this is going to be a little curveball for you boys, but I'm going to get on my soapbox for about 60 seconds. Are you ready, Isbits?
Go for it.
There we go. All right, this is going out to Buck Nation, and some of you people who think we're too, quote, negative on this podcast. Yes, I read the comments. I read the comments. Let me tell you something. I'm taking that as a point of pride, because you are not going to hear honest talk like we do on this podcast anywhere else. We are not beholden to this organization. We want them to do well, but we will point out the positives and the flaws of this franchise, and always will going forward. Who else has the gumption to question Jason Light publicly on some of his moves? Who else talks about Bruce Arians trying to regain his legacy after 3 years of not cracking 500? Nobody else does that. So we are not overly negative. We try to be objective and honest about all the hype surrounding this team. And if they win 10 or 11 games, we'll be out there waving the flag. But you're not going to get this kind of coverage anywhere else.
Ira, little clarification, Ira. We don't try to be honest, okay? Come on. We just are. You know, it's like one of my big pet peeves is saying, let's be honest now. Yeah, I mean, no, we're just going to lay it out there. For the record, you've already picked the Bucks, Ira, to finish 11-5. Anybody who's listening to you knows you've picked them to go 11-5. Lee and I both think they're a winning team this year. What more do you want?
And Lee, it's important we make this point too. We read all the other coverage. We're well aware of what other people are saying. You know, we are not pie in the sky, and we are not worried that somebody's not gonna talk to us if we raise some issues. So keep doing what you're doing, gentlemen.
I often get a text from someone at One Buck Palace that constantly hounds me about being negative. And this person texted me one afternoon on a Saturday afternoon. I had just written, I was literally in the middle of writing a story about, I thought the cornerbacks were, you know, up and coming. And the day before I wrote two or three, what I thought was positive stories. And finally I replied to this guy and I'm like, look, there's no way I can airbrush this franchise's record the past decade. What do you want me to do?
You know what it comes down to, Steve? Something that Bruce Arians said the other day. We ain't done squat. We ain't done squat. Steve, they don't get the benefit of the doubt. This is not the New England Patriots. This is not a perennial playoff franchise. They don't get the benefit of the doubt until they do it, Steven.
Sure. And look, we're just fans here. We're doing our thing as well as journalists at the same time. And no, of course the Bucks don't get the benefit of the doubt. But again, Ira, you picked them to go 11-5. Lee and I think they're at least 9-7. We haven't given our exact picks yet. So yeah, they're doing good things. They're in a good spot, but they have to go prove it. And like you said, they haven't done squat and they certainly don't get the benefit of the doubt. One big thing on the benefit of the doubt front, Ira, that's been not in my craw, it'd be the wrong word, but I've been thinking about this for a while, is Arians. Back in 2016, what did he have? He had a 37-year-old quarterback who wasn't necessarily in the same physical condition as Tom Brady. A 37-year-old quarterback. And he knew he had to protect him. He knew that that guy was the franchise, because in 2015, he might have been an MVP candidate.
Yes.
And what happened in 2016? Carson Palmer got beat to hell. He got knocked to shreds. And he took 40 sacks, and he got beaten up. He only completed 61% of his passes. And he threw for a lot of numbers, a lot of yards. But I worry about Arians knowing how to protect a guy of Brady's age.
That's a good point, Steve. And guys, I got to think Arians is smart enough to learn from his mistakes. And he kind of, that five wide and get those guys out in the pattern. And Carson, you're on your own. You got to take a hit. You got to hang in the pocket and wait till that guy gets open. Lee, that I don't think that's going to work in 2020.
I would hope that Arians learned. You know what? That's why he got bounced from Pittsburgh, because the Roonies didn't like Roethlisberger getting a beating like he was. And that is literally why they didn't bring him back at Pittsburgh. You know, it's semantic. Was he fired? Was he not brought back? You know, but that's why they got rid of him, specifically for that reason, because they saw their franchise in Roethlisberger, and to be more cold about it, they saw their investment in Roethlisberger. They thought that investment was getting wasted by getting pounded on in Arians' offense. So that's why he wound up in Arizona. I would hope that Arians, and apparently if you believe certain reports, he is doing this, that he's listening to Brady, that they're, you know, meeting and like, okay, what do you do? What do you want to run? We've got plays that we can help you out that you like, and that they're actually having a meeting of the minds. Arians and Brady figuring out the new offense.
Steve, I don't think Brady's going to be as patient as Palmer. His history tells me that, you know, in his mind, you know, 2.5, 3 seconds, the ball's got to be out. The ball's got to be out. It's either going to be on the ground or in my receiver's hands. And if it's on the ground, we live another day. That's the way Brady's wired. He's not exactly the same as Palmer. And I don't think they're going to ask him to do the same things.
All right, Ira, hold on, Iris. Ira, this leads us to a fantastic subject. Lee knows I was going to bring this up, and I want you to dial in here. We need your sage wisdom, because you teed it up perfectly. You didn't even know it was coming. So dial in, Ira. Take a deep breath while I remind everybody that Bill Curry Ford is where to go shopping for a new vehicle, a pre-owned vehicle. They've got a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned. And you can still get a 2019 closeout, not many left, for just incredible deals, Ira. You wouldn't even believe that gorgeous Ford Escape that you drive. You can get a 2019 on a closeout through the end of this month only at Bill Curry Ford. Get to their website, BillCurryFord.com. And, of course, our thanks to Big Storm Beer and Florida's Elite Restoration. Ira, I need you to explain this to me. Okay, and Lee's going to help here, but you need to explain this to me because.
By the way, when we were reading those promos, Steve, it gave me time to clean up Cosmo's pee. So I thank you for that.
Excellent, excellent. You see, but you know, if you weren't sure if it was pee, if you thought it was water, who would you call?
Florida's Elite Restoration.
There you go, Sage. Now,
Stevie, go ahead.
Tom Brady, we hear about this quick release. The offensive linemen who aren't watching him release the ball, they're talking about the quick release and all this stuff. Well, the NFL tracks this stuff, Ira, with their next-gen technology, the fancy computer chips and the sensors on the balls. It's not subjective. It's an objective, data-driven situation. And Tom Brady, last year, he had what they called the 13th quickest, quote, time to throw in the league. And that's the measurement of from the time the ball is snapped until the time the ball is released on every single pass attempt. It doesn't count sacks. So Brady was 13th quickest at 2.75 seconds. 13th in the league, okay? Right behind him, Jameis Winston and Matt Ryan at 2.7 seconds. 2.77, Brady at 2.75. So we know Brady wasn't doing a ton of scrambling. So how is that happening, Ira? What is with this quick release that I'm not seeing here when these guys are pretty much exact. Now, just to give you a couple more numbers while you think about that, Brady was 7th quickest in the NFL in 2018, but he was 24th quickest in 2017. And in 2016, Carson Palmer, when I told you he got beaten up, he was one of the quickest throwers in the league at 2.49 seconds of average time to throw, and that's a better mark than Brady ever had. So explain this to me, Ira.
All right, Steve. The one factor that's missing is how much under siege the guy is. And in New England, I would say they did a darn good job of protecting Brady. Belichick knew who the franchise was and acted accordingly. Lee, they didn't factor in the sack numbers. And I think Brady, Steve, you got the numbers in front of you. He is masterful at avoiding sacks. He's masterful. Now, whether that translates to 2.7 or 3.2, the fact is you can't get the guy on the ground. It's very difficult. And the last time I looked, Lee, the Patriots offensive line was not flush with Pro Bowlers. They were not. Logan Mankins, I think, is you know, the last time they had a big-time offensive lineman. Who's Nate Solder? And Nate Solder goes to another team. He's just a guy, Lee, just a guy. But they work well together. And the fact remains that over the course of 20 years, this is not a one-year wonder thing, Brady is very difficult to get on the ground, and Jameis Winston was on the ground more than a praying mantis last year. So that is a huge difference right there, Lee.
Well, I think, first off, I think we're talking about two different elements here. Time to throw and release. When I speak about release, I'm talking about when that ball's locked and loaded, ready to fire, and actually the trigger's pulled. That's what I call release. And in that respect, Brady is damn quick. And I can only go by my eyes. I can't say, well, my eyes say it's blue, but you're telling me it's orange. Okay, well, that's a little hocus-pocus, pro football-focused nonsense. I see a damn quick release. Now, time to throw, that's a whole different element. However, so Tom House, he's a throwing coach. He made his bones as a pitching coach. He's now a throwing coach. He works with Brady, works with Breeze. And if you could throw something, House will coach you up. Recently on Twitter, and specifically it was Tuesday night on Twitter, someone referred to Brady's release. And like I said, my definition of release is when the ball's locked and loaded to the time the trigger's pulled. He said, yes, Brady does have a quick release, but it kind of looks quicker than your eyes tell you. And he went into great detail, but to sum it up in layman's terms, it's sort of an optical illusion, the way he contorts his body, the torque of his arm, et cetera, et cetera. He says, yes, Brady's got a quick release, but to the naked eye, it looks quicker than what it may actually be because of how he throws.
I think one of the biggest differences Buck fans are going to see in the next year or two with number 12 is his willingness, not eager, but his willingness to check the ball down, flip it to Shady McCoy, flip it to Jones, 7 yards to Bray. That doesn't bother him. As long as the chains keep moving, that's what it's all about for him. And I think in the long run, that kind of thinking, long drives. Now, Winston was not famous for long drives. Now, a drive's a drive. If it ends up with a touchdown, Buck fans are happy. But there's an intangible. There's an intangible, the time of possession. And one of them is who's going to benefit from that? The guys on the other side. JPP and Shaq Barrett and Sue and that group. They're going to be on the field less, and I think it all works together for a successful marriage.
I hear you, Stage. I just wanted to mention Trent Brown of the Patriots a couple years ago. Had a superstar season, then went on to the Niners last year. Went on to the Raiders last year and made the Pro Bowl. So he's had some guys. I know his guard up there the last couple of years. I forget his name. He's a perennial top flight guard. I forgot his name. He's had some players, but it's an interesting debate. The numbers and why Brady has this metric here that doesn't seem to add up. Drew Brees gets rid of the ball faster than Brady, according to this statistic, consistently. So, you know, and they're similar quarterbacks at this time in their life, as far as Brees doesn't move around anywhere close to what he used to. So,
and he's tough to sack like Brady.
Knows when to ditch the ball. So, look, we just hope Brady doesn't get killed because he's the key to the season, and I won't reference Blaine Gabbert to you. I already know that's a sore subject.
Steve, just to be clear about the stat you're citing, and I know next gen. That means from the snap of the ball to the release of the ball.
Correct.
Usually, at least with me, when I'm talking about release, I'm talking about the guy has the ball in his hands, he's locked and loaded, he's scanning the field to the time he pulls the trigger.
Yeah. So. Oh, I know. You're talking about decision, from decision to release is what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Speaking about release, Steve, when are you going to release me from this podcast, Mr. Isbitz?
3 minutes, Ira. We'll give it a 3-minute warning. Tell us about your column. You dove into the Buccaneers cornerbacks. You seem excited. Anybody can read it, of course, at joebucksfan.com. What were you trying to say there, Ira?
Well, I was trying. I think it's obvious that alongside the kicker position, which is so laughable, we can't even discuss it with a straight face on this podcast. The other spot that is the eternal quest for this franchise, and I'm talking 15 years, which is an eternity by NFL standards, is cornerback. You know, they tried the Verners. They draft Hargraves. MJ Stewart, come on down. Revis, we're going to trade for you, give up a first-round pick, pay you a fortune. You're not 100%. The next year when you are 100%, we don't want you. I mean, it's a fiasco. It is a total fiasco. And now all of a sudden, from outside appearances, on paper, and Lee, let's mention that again, on paper, the Bucs may not be in bad shape in corner. Now, I don't see the next Rondé Barber, and I said they would even settle for the next Brian Kelly, who was a pretty darn good player.
Yeah.
But the way that these guys played, this trio, and I'm a little higher on Davis and Dean than I am on Bunting, even though Bunting led the team in interceptions last year with three. He did. But the way they played, I think, you know, gives optimism, Lee, that they may not be in bad shape at corner. We have not been able to say that about this team. They had Grimes, but Grimes wasn't a shutdown guy. He was competent, had one or two pretty good years for the Bucs. The last year was awful, absolutely awful, and it ended in terrible fashion, saying, I'm not getting paid enough to travel with the other team's best receiver. Whoever heard of something like that? I was shocked that came out of Grimes' mouth. You notice from that moment on, he was never picked up again. I don't know if he wanted to play anymore, but nobody wanted him at that point. You know, Dean and Davis, and I think I lean towards Dean a little bit. Other people like Davis better. I like Dean better. They get their hands on a lot of balls, and I think ultimately when that happens, at least they're in the vicinity, Lee. That is a big difference for you and I. Lee, we're tired of guys catching balls and no Buck around them within 8 yards. That was just driving you and I absolutely crazy for years and years.
You're setting Steve up for a rant here, aren't you?
Of course. Absolutely. Now, and I think Steve Bowles is showing confidence in these guys because he's not lining them up 10 yards off the receiver. And I like that, too.
Steve doesn't drink that Kool-Aid.
I'm fine. I'm ready for this season. We got three 23-year-old cornerbacks. I expect two of them to take a step up. I think one of them's probably not going to be what we think he is. And hopefully one of them becomes a real number one cornerback because it's really hard to win against the elite teams without a lockdown corner. We've seen that before. But Ira, I got to go because I've been fielding texts since we've been talking here from EJ Biggers and Myron Lewis and Eric Wright has been texting me, and I can't get rid of Eric Wright. So let's remind everybody that the podcast can be subscribed to at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, etc. You can leave a review and a comment, and we're excited, Ira. And of course, we're going to hear from you later this week.
And we got another podcast this week, Mr. DeKemper. It never stops. Never stops.
Never stops.
Now get out of here, Ira. Go have some lunch.